All right, we are at 6:30 for February 6, 2024 work session. We have police department updates. We have our chief reverend here to address the council. Hello.
Hello, thanks, Mr. Mayor, members of the council, and City Manager Bell. This isn't your typical quarterly police updates. These are a couple updates that came upon us rather suddenly, and so we just wanted to give you a heads up on them. One is regarding our mental health social worker and our partnership with Hennepin County. Over the past 3 years, as you know, we had this partnership with the county where we paid a portion of the salary and the county picked up the other portion. Unfortunately, within the last 3 years, we have had some issues with not our mental health social worker per se, but just the leadership within the county and what's been going on with the mental health social worker program. And so we had lost two of our previous mental health social workers. They either took different roles within the county or left the county itself. And this one, Savannah, that you met just recently, was about ready to take another role as well within the county because of leadership issues. And so we found it, we didn't like that. We didn't want that to happen. We certainly didn't want to lose Savannah due to the fact that she has been phenomenal for us and our community. And so after speaking to City Manager Bell and realizing that we had the funding within our police department, and I'll share with you why, but I'm going to turn it over to Deputy Chief Hubbard just to give you a little bit more background on the county piece, and then I'll talk to you about the funding.
So I think the chief summed it up correctly. They have been having trouble not just with us retaining social workers, and in this case, Savannah's been outstanding. She has set the bar super high to this community in the service that she's provided. And so she came in and said, "Yeah, I can't do this." And so we had a conversation about, "Well, what is it?" And she said, "It's the leadership that I have. I love this city. I love the work that I'm doing. I love working with our community, with the department. I just need to do something different." And so fortunately, I'll let the chief get into the specifics, but we were able to approach her and ask her to take a position within the city, a newly created position in the police department that we have titled Mental Health Professional. And we, in looking at being able to do that, it is a unique model in Hennepin County because that model that they have has grown exponentially over a short period of time, which is part of their problem. However, the model exists in many other cities. So there's six cities kind of north and east of us that have similar models. And so I had a number of conversations with my colleagues in those cities to see how that was going. All of them, to a person, said the arrangement has been much better. It allows much more flexibility. It allows us to have that individual leaning into things that maybe they wouldn't be able to because the county's put some boundaries on them. And so Savannah was very intrigued at the idea. I expect that there will be a little bump along the way as we kind of try to navigate this. But the reality is that what it allows her in terms of flexibility and ability to take someone where they're at and really see them through with needs without being told, "No, you can't do that. That's not within the purview," I think will be an outstanding addition, really with a pretty minimal expense to the city.
So the county, there was a 60%, 40% split between the county and the city. And last year, Deputy Chief Hubbard and myself were at a meeting where we were told by county workers that our portion of that 40% was going to be raised by almost approximately $12,000 or so because of, actually, it was more like $18,000 because of the increase in COLA and some other increases. I assumed that that increase was going to start in 2024, but it turns out that our contract with the county actually went through 2024, and the extra $18,000 wasn't going to start until 2025. But you approved a budget for the extra $18,000 in 2024, which will cover Savannah's wage. And then our public safety aid, as you remember, we have a portion of public safety aid that we actually put aside for our mental health program, not knowing that this was going to happen, but we were actually looking at other avenues because of our frustration with the county. And so we actually have $100,000 in that pool to be able to supplement her fringe benefits for that. So that is how we are paying for this position.
Yeah, go ahead.
When the county was picking up a portion of this position salary, were the duties shared with the county as well? Did they get 60% of her time? Not at all. No.
We paid 60%.
Okay.
The county paid 40%. And I would suggest no. I think if 40% involves meetings and someone micromanaging you, then probably yes, it did. But in terms of if another city had a social worker that was gone, they may draw from the existing pool to help fill in. But in theory, if that's not the case, she was assigned full time here.
Okay. Okay.
So, yeah, go ahead, John.
And then when you say fringe benefits, you're talking about her benefits in terms of healthcare, dental, vision.
Correct.
Vacation.
Correct.
So, okay.
Correct.
All right.
Yeah.
100,000 seems like a lot for fringe benefits.
No.
No. $100,000 is what we put aside for a number of years.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. No. That was.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was so like the next six.
Six years. Okay. Okay.
Let's walk through the numbers. 60% is what in dollars?
So $82,000 is what we budgeted for our 60% for 2024.
Which includes the 18K.
It does.
Okay.
Yep.
83.
Thank you. 83,000.
Mayor, can I ask one question
before
you
go on?
And then I take it you've given some money to Hennepin County, correct, for this year, for 2024?
Not yet. They haven't billed us for it yet, but we did give them a 30-day resignation, if you will.
2 months.
2 months. We will pay for 2 months of it, January and through.
So you haven't paid that 2 months, so you don't have to claw back any money, basically.
No.
Telling me.
Nope. Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Yep.
So you know my question. It's just a matter of whether I can ask it proper.
Yeah.
So we got 83 already in our budget.
Correct.
Routinely. And that is going to just get transferred to this position.
Yep, it'll go to our salary line item, budget item. Yep.
So what is the deficit?
I believe it's 24. I believe the difference is 24,000.
Which is the fringe benefit portion.
Okay.
The difference between the total package of salary and benefits and what we have budgeted is, I believe, about 24,000, give or take 1,000.
Yep. For 2024?
Correct.
So then in 2025, that 18,000 that we had included this year, like where would that come from?
So the money that's budgeted currently would continue.
Okay, gotcha.
And at this point, that $100,000 that the chief talked about in that public safety aid money, we really had untargeted. We just knew that if we wanted to look to expand the program, that we would have seed money to do that. That didn't have to be a problem. We didn't know what that meant, and we didn't think that it would happen this fast. But in theory, with no change in the regular operating budget, that would put us 4 years into it before we would be looking at a funding problem if we continue to use that source, which is what one of the things that fund was targeted for.
So the 83,000 plus 100,000 from public.
Yes.
Split over years.
Over okay. 4 years, that, probably.
Okay, gotcha.
Ideally.
Gotcha.
Right. Okay. 83,000 every year. That's already budgeted for. And then the 100,000 split over 4 years.
Yep. Yep. And the cost conversation is all about when is it going to have a budget effect? And it's probably 4 years out since we have 100,000 if we so desire to dedicate that.
Correct. For it. Correct.
And yeah. We've had a lot of conversations about future pressures on budgets, and just this little bit is an additional pressure in the future. Mm-hmm. And thank God it's not a full position. So,
did she accept? Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That's, when you guys, when Adam first brought it to me, I thought, before he got done, I'm thinking, why don't we just hire her? Because I knew we had a certain amount of funds there. And I'm glad you guys are thinking the same way. So kudos, kudos for doing the background, you know, making sure you're doing due diligence, checking with your peers. Appreciate that. John, go ahead.
Could you enlighten me on what Hennepin County was doing to her? I mean, could you, do you care to, like, you know, you know, tell us a little bit of what made this decision so eminent?
I just think it was, I mean, I don't want to speak for all 40 social workers that they have, but certainly the three that we had, they just felt like they were often hamstrung in policy bureaucracy, questioning timing to be able to do what they felt they should be doing.
So they didn't feel empowered is what you're trying to tell me.
Yes.
So, okay. All right. Very good.
And I don't think it's a secret. I don't believe we're the only ones who have those concerns. I don't think the concerns that we have are uniquely Crystal.
Yeah.
All right.
Go ahead.
Oh, does she have an office here?
She currently? Does.
She does. Okay.
John?
And then lastly, the cities north and west of us, roughly, can you give me a, you know, ballpark of who they are that have?
Coon Rapids, Fridley, Roseville, Maplewood, Blaine. It's one more in the mix.
Mm-hmm. So not the usual players. That's pretty good. Yeah. Okay, good. Mm-hmm. All right.
Dave? Well, I was just going to say it's really exciting. So I think I always think about, you know, how can we do policing different and make it better? And I'm really excited that we can keep her on and keep this as part of the police force. So for me, it's just really exciting. And it's a good thing, I think.
Thanks. We're excited too.
So none of our neighbors have full-time social workers?
They do
under the same arrangement.
Mm-hmm. Okay. They do under the county.
And are they experiencing the same?
I don't want to speak for any of our neighbors. I just know that there are other police agencies within the county who are using that service who have expressed frustration.
I believe every city has one.
And some of them are sharing. I believe they have. I think of the 34 cities in the county, I think the last number I heard is that 30 of them currently have somehow are connected. If you recall, we started with sharing the social worker with the two cities. That's how a lot of these programs have started, and some have branched. I think all of the Lake Minnetonka cities share one, for instance. So,
Painful. Yeah.
So the 40% that the county is currently providing us, when we're now not using that 40%, do we get that money for other things, or it's just
no?
Okay,
lose it. One thing, the county's costs for the employee were higher.
Okay,
so there were some like some of their benefits are greater, so they were actually spending more than he would spend for the house.
Just think of it like a lease. You put a third party in between, it's going to cost more.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I couldn't help it. Yeah. All right.
Can I ask one last question?
Sure.
So do we have to, we're just being told about this, or do we have to approve this?
Well, if there's objection from the council, we would want to know, because it's essentially budgeted funds for this year. If it's something that the council wanted to, at any point, we could have cut it. Council could cut it from the 25 budget, the mental health line item. That would be kind of the time. So this is the staff's proposal to keep it for this year and the plan to go forward of how to go forward.
So then it would come up next year for next year's budget, right? So
it'd be part of next year's budget.
But as we approve the budget, it wouldn't have to be.
We can make that decision to increase the budget for that in 4 years after we use up the funds that have been put aside.
True.
So we can do it either way. Yes.
Okay.
So, I mean, if the council, even now with our embedded program that we had, if the council wanted to change that, you'd have the same authority to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't get the sense that anybody wants to change anything. So
answer your question.
There you go.
Yeah. Awesome. I mean, if I were to think about it right now, just with the information I have today, I would say, we wouldn't want to increase the budget, because I'd rather have any any of that increase go towards our fund balance or our emergency fund, because that still is a priority for us. And yeah, it puts it off 4 years. I think that's a benefit.
Mr. Mayor?
Yeah.
Can I nerd out here just for a second on the legal issue of the question regarding, John's question about, do we have to approve this as a council? This is just the way charter cities are set up. So yes, you needed to approve a contract because it was more than $25,000 for that position. So you made that decision. But once it comes to hire fire, that's city manager's decision. And of course you have purse string decisions, but that falls to the city manager. So no, you don't have to vote on hires. And can't, actually.
Was everybody eyeing up Adam now?
He already gave us the go ahead in case.
There is another ability that you have.
I'm sorry,
but that doesn't matter.
It's like, seriously, if there's any heartburn, this is the place and time for it. Seeing none. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. We have one last thing for you quickly, yes. And I'll try to get that within the next 13 minutes here. I think we can get through it. As you remember, I think we mentioned a few months ago, very roughly and briefly during a meeting about the task force with the partnership with the Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. We had shared with you during a quarterly update that we dissolved our Northwest Drug Task Force that was in for the last 30 some years, that was recently dissolved about 2 years ago due to staffing levels from other cities that they just couldn't any longer afford to staff their people because of they just didn't have enough cops working for them, basically. So we were approached by the BCA regarding this violent offender task force to be one of 10 cities to work with the state to move forward and have one of our officers be embedded with the Minnesota BCA, just like we did with our task force. So I'm going to turn it over to Brian to brief you on the partnership itself, and then I'll chat with you about the other ask that we have after that.
So as you saw in your packet, that's really an explanation of the background that got us to this spot. Certainly, regardless of what direction we end up going, it's certainly we feel honored that the state decided that we were a worthy partner to consider. The Violent Crime Reduction Unit, as they're calling it, is going to be a 20 officer unit operated under the state auspice. And what they are planning to do is to take 10 local officers, five from the east side of the cities and five from the west side of the cities outside of Minneapolis-St. Paul, and then supplement that with the same number of BCA agents. So there will be 10 officers total on the east side, 10 officers on the west side. Their focus is going to be, obviously, as the name implies, on violent crime reduction. And they will be, their plan is to be a both proactive and reactive agency as they get themselves put together. So if we had some type of a violent crime here in our city or any of the member cities, that team would come in and would help us do the initial legwork and then the investigation into that, which would be true of any of the cities. But really the vision moving forward is that they start being able to identify kind of trends before the violent crime. So for instance, if you look at Denver, has a model that's a little bit similar. And typically what happens is you only investigate fatal shootings. So if someone dies, you do an investigation. Denver has seen some great success in violent crime reduction at investigating non-fatal shootings, because they often, one's connected to the other, connected to the other. And so I know that the state's envisioning of this is that, assuming that time allows, to try and do some of that work to get in front of it, as opposed to being all you're doing is retaliatory. and so they, as we did with the task force, the officer would be assigned there. They would still be our officer. They would be under day-to-day supervision of that task force leader. A special agent in charge would be running that unit with dotted line responsibility to the department, because they're still our officer and still interfacing. We still will, they will have all the expectations that our staff have for training. We will still assign them cases for investigation as they're appropriate. And so it's, I think it's a, there are a number of task force models, as the memo alluded to. We looked into all of them. And it seems pretty clear that if we're going to be involved in a greater task force, this seems like we're going to get both the best investment and the best return in terms of resource, right? Because something happens here and we now have a direct connection to a state task force and everything else that comes with that. So I'll in the nut, that's the very high level, and obviously we can answer questions.
And the ask is going to be twofold. The first one, and not tonight, but the first one would be for you at the next council meeting, when we give you the joint powers agreement, is to approve that joint powers agreement to go ahead and work with the drug task or the violent reduction task force. One of the things that comes with this, which is great, is the state will pay for everything related to this officer. So their salary, their fringe benefits, their overtime, the vehicle they're going to use, any equipment such as body camera, any other equipment that they may need. So we get all of that back to the city, so it's no cost to us. So the ask will be at the next council meeting is to approve that joint powers agreement to approve that. The second ask that we ask, So that didn't make any sense, Taji. None at all. But I'm going to move forward with it, is that because we're getting everything paid for by the task force, that means that we can then hire a 35th officer until we no longer are part of this task force, meaning because they're paying for that officer, we then can hire an additional officer to work our streets here in Crystal and pay for that salary with what we already are paying for with the officer who's going to the state. Does that make sense? And then when the funding is done with the state, then we no longer would have 35 officers. We would go back down to 34. That makes sense.
And the current joint powers agreement is a 3-year agreement. That's what's been allocated. The BCA superintendent expects that this continues to be a legislative priority and sees that going beyond, but obviously who knows. But the joint powers agreement that is currently that we're reviewing is a 3-year agreement.
So assuming that we do not renew the joint powers agreement, we would get rid of an officer kind of based on attrition?
Right. I mean, here's the bottom line. I mean, I'm sure you know this just based on all the officers that you've met over the last several years. Since I've been chief, though, almost 13 years, we've been fully staffed maybe 3 months out of those 13 years. So I don't think we're ever, not because of any other reason, just because we're just, you know, folks retire, they get injured, they whatever. So we're not concerned about having to fire anybody, because we most likely will just be not hiring anybody for that 34th spot.
Yeah, just to be clear, we consider that normal transition.
Absolutely normal. Yeah,
just yep. To be clear, yep. We've been essentially fully staffed with short periods of time.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
And then people leave and come
yep.
and go.
Yeah. Yep.
Tracy,
go ahead.
So if, assuming that it doesn't continue past the 3 years, what happens with the vehicle and all the equipment?
Goes back state to the state.
Would take that
back. Oh, it does. Okay.
John?
And then, Deputy Chief, you talked about that the officer that's on the joint task force would also have work that's assigned to him from you. Is that just the violent crime work?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, if we were investigating a violent crime here, we're not going to assign it to a different investigator who's working other cases. We're going to assign it to the officer that's that, even though it may not be the big newsworthy thing, but it fits in the category. Certainly, we would expect that person to work some of those cases. That won't be a large majority of what they're doing, but certainly may be an expectation.
Okay.
Yeah, go ahead, Tashi.
So the member agency jurisdictions were the VCRU. Are those, like, would we be part of that even if we didn't have an officer?
No.
So if you have an officer, you are part of it.
Correct.
Yes. I mean, I think the caveat would be that, you know, if we had a major incident as we had a few years ago, if we called the BCA saying we need assistance, they're going to provide assistance because they're a state agency and this is a state task force.
Mm-hmm.
But it's going to be a pretty tapered response, right? Clearly, as well, clearly we know that these agencies, if something happens here, that is number one priority for that, the unit at that point.
Okay, great. And then also, just help me understand the difference between the drug task force and this violent task force. Seems like they're different.
Yes. The drug task force evolved over time. So back when the drug task force started, it was drugs. That's what they did, right? And over time, as drugs and violence began connected, the drug task force, you're really not looking for drugs if you're not connecting it to violence and to guns, et cetera. So that really by the time we just use DTF because it's easy, but by the time we dissolved the DTF, we really, it was a violent crime unit that focused on guns and drugs, if you will. So certainly we know that lots of the violent crime that happens is associated with drugs. So I would expect that that's going to be a part of what happens here.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not the primary focus like it was back in the day when a DTF started.
Okay, thank you.
Feels almost like name only. And pretty much same function, but just a different name. Go ahead, Tracy.
So just so I understand it, so the officer that's chosen to go, will they be staffed here or will they be staffed? They'll be staffed elsewhere. So will they do anything for the city?
So they would still be a police officer here and have all of the expectations that our officers have in terms of training and et cetera. And part of the expectation when we send a task force officer is that you don't get to go away and be gone.
Okay.
You still have to interface some, but the task force will be officed. I think they're looking at a location on the east side somewhere. And so that will be their daily space, but I would expect on a weekly basis that they will be back here interfacing. And
okay.
Yeah.
And do you see like any sort of benefit to the, like with this and our crime analyst? Like some sort of, I mean, I would assume that there'd be a pretty good.
Certainly maybe if they're doing some investigative work, but you know, the BCA, that is, frankly, that is something that that comes to bear. The BCA has a monster in analytical unit, right? And so if you're a task force officer there, you just are making some phone calls, right? So my expectation would be that we're going to rely on the state to do a lot of that work and we'll leave our crime analyst here to,
Like maybe just by, you would think that maybe just being around that a little bit would be a good
absolutely
experience for.
Yep, agreed.
Cool.
All right. So, real quick one.
Real quick.
We can revisit two afterwards. I mean, okay, Chief will still be around.
Oh,
I'm pretty sure
we will. Yep.
Okay.
We will.
I can wait.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
We are continuing the work session. At this time, I'd like to call the work session back to order. It was continued. All right, so Therese had a question.
Yes. What was it called before?
The Northwest Drug Task Force.
And so that had a contract that was every 3 years, right?
No. There was a joint powers agreement with that task force as mm-hmm. well. However, we were made up of seven member cities that bordered us, and they had their own funding source that was a grant through the state. And no, it wasn't that every 3 year cycle.
Oh, okay. But this contract is for 3 years?
It is.
And will it be renewed in 3 years likely?
That's our that's the state's intention. According to the BCA superintendent, he actually would like to see them get additional funding to expand it. But at this point, that's their intent.
Okay, thank you.
Well, that's interesting. Would they expand the same one or would they create another one?
It sounded like from the briefing that we had that I think there this unit has been formed previously in a little bit of a different configuration and really was targeted specifically in assisting Minneapolis. That work is going to continue. This is separate of that. So I think at this point, bringing these agencies together, I won't say it's a trial run, but I think we're trying to start with something manageable and see how that goes and determine what that is. Obviously, it wouldn't be out of the question, but I can't picture it happening that this task force would be sent to Rochester if something happened. But do I see the state being interested in trying to form similar task force in different parts of the state potentially? Do they have the potential of expanding this task force in the metro? I suppose that would be possible, but the sense that we got was that they really are just trying to get some committed agencies that they know are going to be good partners and see how it goes initially.
Okay. Very good.
So, Mr. Mayor, the ask would be at the next council meeting that you approve the joint powers agreement with the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. And then the second ask would be for you to approve our authorized strength level from 34 officers to 35, knowing that there would be no budget impact to our operating budget at all. That means
what does that process look like? Do we have, like, we have to pay for it initially and then they reimburse, correct?
Yes.
Yeah,
it's similar to other state contracts and grants.
So it's fairly timely.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah.
Yep.
All right. Does that include the equipment?
Everything.
The state will, if I guess we haven't dug that deep into the weeds, but I believe what will happen is that the state will purchase the equipment.
Okay.
And then they will give it to us. If there are specific things that we say, yeah, if you're a crystal officer, you have to have this. I'm not sure what that would be. Maybe a handgun, for instance. But all of the vehicles, radios, body cameras, et cetera, I believe the state would purchase and distribute. So we would be really responsible for salary, overtime, benefits on a bill back. And the other state grants that we have right now, that happens quarterly.
So, like body cam, would that fit? They would buy our system or they would buy their own?
The state has their own. Yep. And so we actually, part of the JPA that you would approve references a handful of BCA that our agreement is that our officer will abide by these 10, I think it is, BCA policies, which we reviewed and they don't contradict with ours, but when they're working in a BCA capacity, they would be using the body camera that BCA assigns them.
They would have control, but we would still have access.
Yes.
Got it. Okay. Anything else? All right.
Can I just ask one just simple question?
You want some feedback?
Just a little bit of a pulse of what you're thinking. And the reason why I'm asking that is just because we're getting ready to, if you're going to approve it here at the next meeting, we're looking at doing a process, obviously, and involving the state with our interview process on who would be a part of that team. So I'm just looking for a pulse of how you're feeling about approving that JPA.
Yeah. So you don't decide who's going.
We do.
You do.
We do. Okay. We're inviting them to our interview process.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. From my perspective, you know, it's a zero budget deal. I think that can do nothing but help us. Yeah. I think that's a benefit to the department and to the community. Anybody else?
Yeah. I'm in full support.
Thank you.
Perfect. That's great. That's awesome. Thank you. Appreciate it. Yeah. All right. Cannabis buffer distances.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Mayor. Council members, I am going to screen share just to put the maps up. No slideshow. But just a quick review of why we're asking for discussion tonight. There are basically three things that staff is looking for guidance on. One is, as you know, the map on the left, the current map, is an illustration of what is in the licensing ordinance. Eventually, the licensing ordinance for low-dose edibles, and eventually that's going to go away when the state takes that over, although we don't know how quickly the state's going to be able to take over really anything regarding cannabis, but sometime in 2025, early 2025, perhaps. But when that happens, our licensing ordinance, I don't know if the correct term is it's moot or it's neutralized or we have to repeal it or whatever, but it will not be something that will have any effect. And so in preparation for that, we wanted to start the discussion now with the council about, do you want to continue to have buffer distances, minimum distances between certain sensitive uses and cannabis shops, whether we're talking the low-dose edibles or the full-blown cannabis shops, when they become a thing. If you want to keep those buffers, then the best place to put them is in the zoning code, basically. And they would have the same effect, except that there would be non-conforming use rights that exist with zoning that don't necessarily exist with other types of ordinances like licensing. And the memo does explain kind of the advantage of doing it that way. So that's question number one. Should these, do you want to have buffer distances? And I guess question 1B is, and do you agree that they should go into the zoning code, the UDC? The second question is, do you want to consider making the buffer distances a little less restrictive? And so with that, we created two different alternate maps. One is going from a slight reduction, and each of them is a successively greater reduction in restrictiveness. So map one, alternate one, everything's the same except the Crystal Shopping Center property is no longer a prescribed use location, because we would define out as a school, we would exclude the Robbinsdale Learning Center, which while it does have some programming for families, it is not principally aimed at people under age 21. It serves a wider age range. And staff feels that you could, again, we'd have to be careful how we define it, but we figure that there is a way to define it so that that would no longer be counted as a school. And that would open up, if you just compare these two maps, this is the shopping center property and the 1,000-foot buffer currently around it, encompasses much of our commercial, the commercial downtown area of Crystal on Bass Lake Road and Broadway. Whereas by not having the shopping center in there, it would open up some other properties potentially for those uses. Going slightly less restrictive would be alternate two, where we would, where we would keep that property as a school, but reduce the school buffer from 1,000 feet to 500 feet, so it's the same as the other uses for which we have buffers, specifically parks and drug or alcohol treatment centers. So that's map alternate two, and you can see the shopping center is still there, but the buffer, the yellow buffer on the current map is gone, and now we just have the red 500-foot buffer. And then alternate three is the least restrictive version, and that is combining those two things. Not only do we eliminate the Robbinsdale Learning Center as a school, but we reduce the school buffer from 1,000 to 500 feet so that it's the same 500-foot buffer for all of those different kinds of uses that we mentioned. And you can see this opens up a fairly substantial commercial area here and some other smaller areas elsewhere. And so from staff's opinion, it really is just a matter of, we presume you'd like to loosen the restrictions because we couldn't make them much more restrictive than we currently have. So do you want to loosen the restrictions in terms of the buffers? And then the third question tonight is there any interest among the members of the city council to working over time to achieve parity between cannabis, off-sale, alcohol, and tobacco? When I say over time, because this would be in the UDC and non-conforming use rights would come into play, it would not impact any existing tobacco or alcohol business. Only if that business shut down for a year or more would they lose their non-conforming use rights. Now, they wouldn't be able to expand, but they would be able to maintain their current use and size of the building and so forth indefinitely. But the reason you might want to consider doing this is to gradually over time reduce the number of places in Crystal that sell alcohol off sale and tobacco so that it's treated again over, it'll take decades, but eventually it would be under the same restrictions effectively as cannabis is starting with. That's all these are policy questions, but that's really a policy question. But that we are putting it out there because it has been brought up by at least one council member to staff that they are interested in exploring that. And at a senior staff level a couple of years ago, as we were looking through the community survey responses, it was clear that the community is dissatisfied, I think, with some of the mixture of businesses, and they want to see something different. And this is a way to achieve that gradually over time without interfering with anyone's ability to continue to operate their current business. So with that, those are the three things we're requesting discussion on, and then we would move forward depending on how tonight's discussion goes.
So I have my first question is regards to treatment centers. Are you making is there a difference in our code between inpatient or outpatient treatment under this requirement?
So that is a great question. And when we're kind of scrambling to create the map or the restrictions under the licensing ordinance, we looked at how the state licenses them. And so if they don't have a state license, we didn't consider them to be a treatment center. So there's only one in Crystal, and that's ResCare at 4901, I think it is, West Broadway, just south of O'Reilly Auto Parts. That's the only one that actually is a state licensed facility that we were able to find. And we weren't planning to widen the scope unless the council wants us to, but we're not sure how to define things that aren't state licensed as treatment centers.
So the Teen Challenge is not considered state licensed?
I'm not aware. I didn't know they had a location.
It's with same building as All Kind.
Oh, yes, sir.
29th yep. place in Douglas.
Yeah, but that isn't, I didn't know that was even licensed because it's not a residential facility. So, no, that is
my question.
Yeah, so that's a fair question. And I think that I don't know. The state law doesn't get specific, of course, as most state laws don't. It just says treatment facilities. I don't remember if it uses the word residential. Troy, do you recall if that's in the statute?
I don't
think so. We'd have to check into that. That's a very good question. And we would certainly do that before drafting regulations for the UDC. Do the council members have a preference? Like, for example, if we are able to only include residential but not include non-residential facilities, or do you want to try to do both?
I'd prefer both. I mean, anybody trying to stay sober, I mean, there's enough triggers just driving through a community, but to have it right next door to your treatment, ridiculous. I mean, it's difficult. And that's the situation we currently have, at least advertised in the southern part of Crystal. We have Kratom, which of course isn't an illegal drug, but it still gets you high. And then the advertising for marijuana and all that, even though they don't sell it. So those things, regardless of Well, I just think it's very difficult to be serious about the benefit of a recovery organization with that next door.
Mr. Mayor, we need to do some more work on that.
Okay.
We will.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
Just quickly looking up the statute, it does say residential treatment facility.
It does say, okay.
Sir, can I say just a couple other words?
Yeah, please.
Give context. This is, it's been a while since we've talked about this. So I just, let me give you a little context, maybe to help refresh a little bit. Local governments have a pretty constrained role in cannabis. Once it gets on up and running, you can do this, not that. And the Office of Cannabis Management wants to further limit your role right out of the gate. So it'll be interesting to see how this all develops. But the point I want to make is that providing setbacks is expressly provided for. You can do setbacks, it says, and it lists certain things, and you can say if setbacks up to a certain amount, but you don't have to do setbacks and you don't have to go up to the maximum that's provided for in the statute. So this is purely a policy decision for the council. The other thing to keep in mind when it comes to these setbacks, there are really going to be two kinds of uses out there. There's going to be what we see right now with the gummies and the drinks and that sort of thing, what are currently the edible cannabinoids. They're going to become the lower potency hemp products or something, low potency. Anyway, same stuff, just different name. So that's going to be in the, you know, like it's starting to be now, grocery stores and smoke shops and liquor stores, all over the place. So I see this, you know, that's, these things are going to be popping up potentially in your commercial areas. So that's definitely from a numbers perspective, you're going to see and continue to see a lot more of those. Because when you get to the other type, the dispensaries and those sorts of things, I mean, those are fewer and far between. And they are subject to things that we'll be talking about eventually with the council about, do you want to put a cap on the number of these you want in the city? Because you can cap those more intense, the dispensaries, how many are allowed in the city. So my point is you may only have two of those. You know, you may cap them at two. Or maybe Minneapolis takes up all of them, and you can say, we don't want any, or we're going to limit it at one. So it all depends on how many of these shops actually start coming up. So the setbacks, these buffers may not be quite as important with those. They would still apply, don't get me wrong. But the thing is, you're not going to see these on every street corner, like maybe you're going to see gummies at grocery stores and things like that. So just want to keep that in mind. There's kind of two different worlds that we're talking about, the intense dispensary where you're buying buds and the whole shoot and match, and just the gummies and treats.
Yeah, Trace.
So it seems like the main difference between like alternate map, alternate one and like three is mainly just opening up more businesses. What is the benefit to the city to open up more commercial? Like, is there a financial benefit, or is it more to like attract or retain more businesses, or like what would be the benefit of reducing the buffers to have more commercial able to do it?
That isn't the driving factor. It is really, think of it as sort of a continuum. How common do you want these businesses to be, these products? How many places or what range of the city do you want these products to be available in? And despite what you might think or the public might think, we do not, at least currently, have a commercial retail vacancy problem with our retail vacancy occupancy rate being about 95% right now. So this is really about how prevalent do you want these products to be in the city? And it's kind of a sliding scale. You can, as Troy indicated, you probably can't make the map much more restrictive, but you certainly can do a different degrees of being less restrictive if you want. You don't have to change the rules from what we have now. We could go with what's currently in licensing and just import that into the UDC as it was adopted, as the licensing rules were adopted last summer. But we felt this was the time to at least bring this up because we know some of the business owners, at least as far as the edibles go, have not been happy about how restrictive our current ordinance is. And so that's why we are presenting these options to you for discussion.
And Lee, is it still where you have to Do you have to have a license, a liquor license to sell?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So, or tobacco. Off sale, alcohol or tobacco. Well, yeah, either of them.
Okay. So how many businesses would actually be in alternate three that would open up that could even do it if we got rid of those buffers?
So, well, quite a few could open. I think the, as you can see, most of the commercial areas are outside of the buffers with alternate three. But a couple notable areas, the Cub area at 36th and 100, there's no, I mean, unless you go down to a 50-foot buffer, there's no way that that will ever be eligible because it's so close to Robbinsdale Middle School, literally across the street. And we measure parcel boundary to parcel boundary, lot line to lot line, not door to door, because if you're trying to do door to door, it's there's just too many shenanigans people can pull and arguments about, well, how do you measure it? Do you measure by walking distance? Do you, right? This is just like parcel line to parcel line. It's easy. It's not ambiguous. There's not room to game it. But so that's a good example of a property that under any of these scenarios would not be eligible, either currently or going forward. But most of the other large commercial properties would potentially be eligible, especially the Crystal Shopping Center area up here with alternate three.
That would be essentially it. Just that the Crystal Shopping Center that opens up, that's really the only impact that any of the options would change.
Did we, I forgot. Yeah, Dave, did you have something?
Yeah. I'm thinking through a lot of this. But reading the note about the Robbinsdale Learning Center, to me, that makes sense to, you know, change that. And I think that opens up the shopping center too. But knowing that it's, you know, more family oriented adult education more than like a alternate school, which is what I thought it was. Well, I guess it would be an alternate school, but that just seems like a no brainer in my end. But I'm still kind of bouncing around the other maps, and I'm open to a smaller, you know, 500 foot. I'm just kind of thinking through it as we talk through it today. So that's where I'm at right now.
Mr. Mayor.
Yeah.
I should point this out, but just so everyone, it's tough to see on the map at this scale, but with the 1,000-foot buffer in St. Raphael's, it just goes into the Crystal Shopping Center property. So under alternate one, it would still be excluded.
The whole property.
Correct, because we do that. The only way to really consistently measure things is property line to property line. So, but other commercial properties over here, for example, because the shopping center itself is no longer a prescribing property, then others are opened up, even if the shopping center itself is still constrained by the presence of St. Raphael's 1,000 feet west. So to really open up our commercial area, alternate three kind of does that. So just want to make, don't want anyone to think that alternate one gets it done in that sense.
Are we talking gummies on this, or are we talking the hard stuff?
Well, right now we're assuming it would be any cannabis product, correct, Troy?
Yeah, it would cover both. I mean, the second more intense stuff isn't legal yet, but it will be in the not too distant future. Right. So it would cover both.
And
that's
those,
where you're saying we could then limit how many. Okay.
Right.
Yeah, you could have additional restrictions beyond the buffers for the full-blown cannabis shops if you choose. Okay. Or at least that one particular restriction. I don't know if there's anything else you can do.
Just to get it in my head, what Troy said, so like when the Office of Cannabis Management gets set up, you know, let's say, you know, a year from now, we could have, you know, one or two dispensaries in town, and then we could have, you know, this map would help the city decide what businesses could have like a THC drink or gummies that are maybe outside of that. Is that how the state law is with that? Or do we not know yet, I guess?
Right. With the way the statute is set up, it treats... It says cities can zone, So you still can have zoning and you can have these setbacks up to these distances that are identified with these specific uses. The limitation that I talked about on the more intensive dispensaries is really just limited to certain types of businesses. My recollection is that it does not apply to those lower potency ones, the gummy and drink business. So I really do think, I mean, yes, the setbacks, the buffers are going to apply to both, but you really are likely to see a lot more of those, the gas stations, the grocery stores, you know, so that really is kind of the policy question. I think that's going to be impacted more by this discussion than the dispensaries. Because again, unless you really as a city want to say, we welcome you all in and you have zoning that accommodates that, you're not going to see 12 of those stores in your city. I mean, I just can't imagine that's going to happen. Okay.
Raji?
Troy, just to confirm what you said, we actually don't even have to have any buffers. Is that accurate?
Correct. Yeah, it says May.
Okay. So I think where I'm at right now is map 3. I like that we have some buffers. I think 500-foot buffers is appropriate. And I would like to see us go the direction of aligning all of the buffers for cannabis, tobacco, and alcohol.
Question, are the present buffers for tobacco and alcohol the same? Are there different?
There are no buffers.
There are no buffers.
Correct. Yeah, council member, I think that's one of the reasons Crystal has 11 or will soon have 11 off sales for a population of 23,000, as other cities historically have been more restrictive about off sales than Crystal. And yeah, I guess that's all I want to say on that. But 11 liquor stores for a city of our size is kind of unusual.
So from a business standpoint, I like being less restrictive. And it does include liquor stores. I mean, we've had liquor stores go out of business. Basically, if we're at 11, we're going to have a liquor store go out of business. That's what that means. And, you know, last time we had this conversation, it was kind of the same yoke. It was like, okay, this is too many. Well, yeah, we know that. And it sorts itself out. One of them goes out of business. People keep trying. I don't think it's a huge issue for us in terms of trying to regulate how many liquor stores. I don't want to start coming up with an arbitrary number and saying, hey, this is what we want to do. I'm not interested in bringing in alcohol and tobacco into this model. Not yet, at least. Maybe down the road I might feel differently about it. I'm not ready to make that leap. In terms of my feelings on this, I have some heartburn with obviously with the treatment center that's not being covered at the 500 zone. And as far as if there's a desire to really open up that plot up in the north, maybe we could look at something less than 1,000, but more than 500 might encompass both of those challenges, either just in the UDC code without having to deal with whether it's a inpatient or whether it's an outpatient treatment center. Maybe there's a magic number there. Maybe it's 600, maybe it's 750. I know there's a squeeze there looking at the map for the park. As it increases, it's going to encroach on the same thing. If you take that 500-foot line I'm looking at, I think I can't see the top of the map. I think it's map 3, where your cursor is. Yes. We expand that much more, and we're going to take it out again. But yet, the 1,000 at St. Raphael's is clearly taking it out. Is there a number there that kind of does what I think
the council is kind of desiring to open that space up, or maybe it's staff desiring. I don't know. I don't want to put words in anybody's mouth. I'm sorry.
Mr. Mayor, can I answer that question?
Sure.
So don't want to say the word arbitrary, but setting the numbers is, I guess, sort of that. You have to have a reason for it. There has to be some rationale, but you can sort of pick whatever number makes sense for your community. And so you could do different numbers. You could say 350 feet or 700 feet. 700 feet is roughly two blocks, or 600 feet, something like that. Two short blocks or one long block. So you can land on a number that matches some physical reality in the community that gets you what you want in terms of your level of restrictiveness.
Right. And that's kind of what I'm suggesting. Yeah.
Mr. Mayor, thank you. But recognizing these caps that are in statute. So the 1,000-foot setback only relates to schools.
Right.
And the 500 is for everything else. So that's the daycare, residential treatment facility, public parks where kids are. I mean, those are kind of the two buckets. So you really can't bump from residential treatment facilities more than 500. You can go up to 500. You can't go further. I would argue that this would preempt you from doing that.
And that's in state statute?
Yeah. Yes, it is. They just gave you a number, and that's where you're at.
Taji, go ahead.
So, Mayor, would you prefer we have no buffers for cannabis? Just because since you are not interested in including tobacco and alcohol, would you ideally apply that logic to cannabis as well and have no buffers?
I didn't say my logic was perfect.
Oh. I'm trying to understand it. So
I definitely have a bias with the cannabis, based on what I experience in my profession. I mean, obviously alcohol is still a huge part of that. I don't know why I can't go there. I can't. I think it's becoming, there's a conflict between trying to be free enterprise and what's, I think what's good for, the recovery side of it. That's the way my mind works. Right. Honestly, I know it looks silly. It looks ridiculous kind of, but I am not creating something that doesn't already exist. This is me or us as a community creating this for something that doesn't exist yet. And to me, it feels a little bit different. I don't want to be responsible for that. I don't want to be a part of that. That's the best I got for that. I mean, I see exactly what you're pointing out. And I feel that. I feel that pretty strong, actually. Adam, you had something.
Mr. Mayor, I had a question for Troy. The current restrictions that our licensing program had on limiting it to the alcohol and tobacco licensed businesses, do you see or would you interpret the reasonable place, time restrictions to allow us to retain that aspect? That's something I haven't been able to find the answer to. If we currently limit it to just those businesses,
right?
Which either way, we don't have, there aren't a lot either way, but that does make a difference between how many we currently, Wine Thief could have one, but the Bell's Bakery can't right now.
Right.
Under our current.
That's an excellent question. And to be honest with you, I'm not 100% sure. If you recall, we're licensing right now kind of in the gap. There really isn't anything there. So we jumped in. Yeah, you decided you wanted to do something until the state is up and running. So they're going to have the licensing, you get the zoning. So I guess the question that pops into my mind is that a zoning restriction? It kind of feels to me not like a zoning restriction, to limit a product within, I think licensing, we can do that. I'm not so sure we can do that as part of zoning. I'm not absolutely ruling it out, but my gut is telling me, probably not.
Just a question for my sake. So let's just say we did tobacco and alcohol buffers. So that would basically, they'd be grandfathered in. So I think of there's a liquor store on 81 and Bass Lake. So let's say 20 years from now, they shut down and someone wanted to open a liquor store and we had those buffers there, they wouldn't be able to open as a liquor store. Is that how that works?
Only if the that particular location shut down for a year.
Oh, okay.
The non-conforming use rights run with the property, and it doesn't, like, they don't get severed because of an ownership change either. It's about the land use. Long as that use continues in operation and doesn't cease for a year or more, the non-conforming use rights run with the property. So the business can change hands. It can't expand. Like, they're stuck. Okay, whatever you had when we adopted this, when this ordinance went into effect, that's the size of your liquor store. You can't make it bigger. And if it goes vacant or ceases operating for a year, then you can't ever reopen a liquor store in that location. That's how the non-conforming use rights work.
Got it. Thank you.
So just clarification on that. If this is in a strip mall and there's a liquor store in the middle of the strip mall and they close, could one open in a different location in that strip mall? Or would that be just for that specific section of the strip mall?
So the non-conforming use rights to continue, that particular use has to continue, that space, whatever that is. If that space discontinues for a year, they're not transferable to other tenant spaces in the building. So it's that, I think, at least that's the way I would interpret it, is non-conforming use rights are for that specific user. So if it's a multi-tenant building, that use, it's that physical space, whatever physical space they have. Because again, we measure that to make sure they don't expand. They couldn't expand into an adjacent space to grow their, you know, make their liquor store bigger. They would be basically whatever you had when the ordinance became effective, you can continue that indefinitely. But if you shut down for more than a year, then it's done.
All right. Did we get anywhere? No, I don't think we got anywhere.
Well, so Mr. Mayor, a question for the council then. I mean, we're bringing this to you now, so we have plenty of time to get something in our zoning and effective before the state takes away our ability to regulate through licensing. So this doesn't have to be the last conversation we have in a work session about it. But it would be good to help us narrow the options a little bit, both in terms of the map and, well, actually primarily in terms of, is there a mapping option that of these three you like, or a modified version of them? You know, for example, 600 feet for schools instead of 1,000, something like that. So we could get it down to a couple of options, and then it becomes a little more practical to start identifying specific current licensed alcohol and tobacco businesses, so you can see which businesses would fall into having to rely on non-conforming use rights instead of being outright permitted. Because that's kind of the second question that I think needs some further discussion based on what I've heard tonight.
Yeah.
So we would look for some guidance tonight as far as, can we narrow it down to maybe a couple different alternatives on the mapping, that there's a clear, a solid majority for in terms of what you want the buffers to be, and then we can get you more detailed info.
So the choice is between 1,000 and 500, right?
Or the school could be less than 1,000. The others can't go up to 1,000. Schools can be reduced. So you could say, keep the others at 500, but schools are going to be 600 or 750 or some number between up to 1,000. So if you wanted to say a school should be at least one block, one long block, then you'd say 600 feet or 700 feet. 700 feet is a good number. It's a little over an eighth of a mile, which is a little over a long block. So,
and that's doable according to state?
For schools.
Yeah, schools.
Yep. Everything else is capped at 5. Right.
Let's play with that number, see what we can do about it. I think we're in pretty much agreement, correct me if I'm wrong, that there's a desire to open up that commercial space up north. Mm-hmm. Are you agree with that?
No. I'm probably, I would stick with our current plan.
because it's been so short. So
I think it should be opened up.
Okay, can't agree on that one.
Well, I'm still just struggling to what opening that's going to, how many businesses are over there that it's going to affect if we opened that up?
There's going to be a lot of retail spaces, specific spaces.
Yeah, there's one tobacco shop there now, and there's a liquor store that's about to open there now.
Okay.
So both of those under our ordinance could get licenses to sell THC if you were to take the Crystal Shopping Center out of being one of the prescribed parcels. I mean, that's not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, they sell alcohol and tobacco, so right. I'm
fine with the 700, but I am in favor of doing it across the board, liquor, tobacco, and THC, because I mean, I work in medical, we see ERs, it's alcohol. That's a huge problem. So I think it should be, I don't know. I grew up in the 80s, Joe Camel, so smoking was a big deal back then, you know? So I don't see where THC or marijuana is any less or any more than that's my thoughts. I feel like they all should be the same, whatever we decide, buffer-wise. But I'm fine with the 700 for schools. If that would that bring St. Raphael up to that then? Is that going to be pretty close to?
I think there's going to be a refined number for that to work.
Yeah, 700 feet would put the boundary just west of the Crystal Shopping Center. So it would take it out of the buffer.
Okay.
If you went with 700 feet. And in terms of elsewhere, like I said, it's not going to affect Cub. No matter what we do, that's going to be prescribed. The other schools are all far enough away from commercial properties that it really is just St. Raphael's that impacts the Crystal Shopping Center, or that impact is the only one.
It's always the Catholics.
Oh. Easy.
Question down there at the end.
Yeah. All right, go ahead, Taji.
John, if you're willing, can you just share more about your stance?
We talked about this extensively a lot, and I just think that all of a sudden, you know, we're new to this game. We're looking at other cities around us. I mean, I look at Plymouth, you know, Plymouth, you can walk 50 feet and buy it. And, you know, Robbinsdale, I saw that. They sell it at their municipal liquor store, but you have to pay cash for it. Their transfer agent won't allow them to use a debit card to pay for it. So I still think that there's a lot to learn about what's going on here with this. And likewise, I think we made our decision. I feel, you know, we worked through it. We should stick with it. And, I know from COVID, liquor stores, they didn't suffer, you know, they don't suffer. And you add another liquor store to Crystal Shopping Mall that is able to sell THC, what happens to the liquor store that we just licensed the last, city council meeting? So I guess it just comes down to, pretty much with your preferences, but I have more of a wait and see type attitude. So that's where I come from. So.
Thanks.
I tend to agree with that. I mean, that would be my preference. Anything veering from that would be me kind of accommodating, and I'd be content with that. I'd be content with what John is talking about.
Gotcha.
So our current map is basically the most restrictive option, correct?
Yes, sir. The only exception is that you did make a decision not to include daycare facilities, because that blew up the map, because that would include in-home daycares as well as centers. And I don't know how you'd, I suppose there's a way to define away the two, but I mean, the map looked very different than one of the earlier drafts of the map. Had all the licensed daycare centers, and there, I don't know how many there are in the city, but it kind of, like I said, it kind of blew up the map. So okay. You decided to take those out. Apart from that, yes, the current map is the most restrictive map that the statute allows.
Okay.
Four?
Yes.
Okay.
I feel like the wait and see, I mean, I feel like this is kind of, time is of the essence a little bit, because as we start licensing, or, I mean, this is coming within the next couple of years. I mean, it's happening now, right? People are, so if we wait and see, and then we fundamentally say, oh, wait, too much is happening. Well, we can't go back on, you know, those licenses that we, whatever, offer, administer, or whatever. So I don't know. I just feel like if we wait and see, we could find ourselves in a pickle.
I just realized I don't think I fully understand something. Are you suggesting we just leave it at the license level, or are you suggesting we incorporate that into the UDC?
Oh, I haven't really thought farther than that. Right now we're just talking about changing our boundaries, I guess. So, I mean, I'm happy with the current map.
What's the difference between licensing and UDC?
Because the licensing is going away for sure. The UDC can still stand.
Yes, sir. If you want these restrictions to survive the state taking over licensing from us,
yeah.
Then we need to move it into the UDC, because that's the only place in our regulatory scheme where we can have buffers, really. Once we can't license it anymore, which the state will be taking away from us at some point.
Yeah, go ahead.
So we move the current map, let's hypothetically, if we move the current map into our UDC, that gives us the most control, and over time we can make changes to the UDC.
Yes,
absolutely.
We do it once a year,
as long as it doesn't conflict with the statute that Troy mentioned.
There we go. So then that would be my preference.
Once a year, unless we're being sued.
Dave, I've had thoughts about maybe we should just. It makes sense to have the boundaries. But part of me is like, we've heard from businesses that are like really mad because like, they can't sell products. And, you know, if a year or two down the line, we have a lot of businesses that are like, hey, we are missing on a gold mine and your buffers are killing us. Maybe that's when we take a step back and look, or maybe it's a yearly or whatever thing. So I'm open to that at some point, but I think it makes sense to, I think map three is what my preference right now, but it makes sense to be there. And then, you know, we can review it as the years go on and things. Okay. Things go through. That's just some thoughts I had.
So my experience, you know, going to the liquor store, you know, the consumables have gone from, you know, just one small shelf behind the counter to like now they have, you know, a full case, you know, where you can, you know, you basically like as you're shopping for your liquor going through the store, I mean, you're basically putting it in your cart and taking it up to the cash register. And it seems like I do know revenue wise, for instance, Eden Prairie, which is a municipal liquor store, they've talked how the revenue generated from THC consumables is now on par with has surpassed what they would sell for, like, you know, bottle stoppers and, you know, and the decanters and, you know, that level of sales, you know, so it's slowly climbing up the ranks, you know, and they're not losing money by not selling this product. Okay. They're not, I mean, it's additional revenue that they can generate. I get that, you know, I don't foresee it as an issue in the city because, you know, looking at the cities that do sell it, it's not something that shows up on their so-called police reports or anything like that. But I do think that, you know, there's a bigger elephant in the room or whatever. And I don't think, you know, we haven't had to deal with that yet, with the higher potency THC beverages and consumables. And I just think that, you know, my wait and see type. I prefer that. I you know, it's okay for me to have Robbinsdale, New Hope, and Plymouth, you know, be a little less restrictive, and then Crystal being a little more restrictive. And so we can kind of get a sense of, like, you know, how this is going to go. You know, I don't think that the current, you know, smoke shops and liquor stores, they're still making money. They're still, you know, generating really good revenue. They have, you know, a considerable turnover in the products that they have in their store now as it is. I mean, we, you know, like was mentioned, we have a lot of liquor stores and we supply a lot of the surrounding areas because Robbinsdale has one liquor store. You know, New Hope has a handful and they're not very well placed for some reason. You know, I just don't really see that we're going to, like, all of a sudden, like, be a dry city, I just don't have that feeling at all, you know. And I just think that if we kind of, like, you know, take it slow and easy, you know, I think we can have the best of both worlds is basically what it comes down to. And that's, I mean, I know it's pretty conservative. I should be, like, all over, you know, map three, right? I should be all over that. Well, it'd be great, right? You know, I mean, it'd be, you know, who knows? Maybe we can drive the price of these products down because we have so many stores.
So,
but I also think that there might be, there's some additional, how would you say, a burden that we might, you know, bring upon ourselves if we don't do this right, you know? So
you guys heard what I heard, right? He almost called himself conservative.
And when it comes to booze and alcohol, yeah. Yes, come on. You know, there's, I have, you know, trunks in my family. I've seen them, you know, wreck beautiful cars. Come on, you know. Yes, yes.
And, Mr. Mayor, and I, your points on the parity question are well taken. I just want to emphasize that putting the same restrictions on alcohol and tobacco in the UDC that we'd be putting on cannabis, it will be a very slow approach. Like, it will take decades. Because, I mean, as long as those businesses don't shut down for a year, they can keep operating. So it is not going to have an immediate impact. It's a very gradual cumulative impact that will be driven primarily by market forces. I mean, that business has to shut down for a year. Arguably, at that point, the market is kind of spoken. So if you're concerned about radical change in terms of those other products besides cannabis, it won't be radical. It'll be very, very gradual. Like I said, decades.
So can I?
Yeah, go ahead.
So then, John, what are you advocating for here? I mean, are you telling me that I should feel comfortable with map three and we'll be okay?
Well, I think the maps, that's that spectrum, right? How restrictive you want to be. Parity is something that, at least at a senior staff level, I mean, there's not a lot of things we can do to change the image of Crystal, to address some of the concerns we hear from the community. But that's one thing we can do, is parity, gradual over time. So I think senior staff's perspective is that this is something we can do. It doesn't take away anyone's ability to continue to operate their current alcohol or tobacco business, and it's gradual, and it is primarily driven, will be driven by market forces as businesses close on their own for their own reasons, independent of our ordinance. So if you're asking me what I think or what senior staff thinks, I think parity is something that we would support. But that's a separate question from which map do you like, right? How restrictive do you want to be? And then do you want those restrictions to apply to alcohol and tobacco as well?
Okay, so then my opinion doesn't change then. You know, I'm sticking with the current map. So I just, and then move into the UDC and move on from there.
And John, would you want tobacco and alcohol to follow?
Yes.
Okay, so you're for parity.
Yes.
Is anybody not for parity other than me?
You're not.
Yeah. I think it's, I'm fine with how it is right now.
So. I'm actually fine how it is right now too.
All right. Looks like we're going to need Forrest at some point.
I think he said he was in favor of parity.
Yeah, he is. Okay. Yeah.
John, can you pull up the
Jeff. I thought there was
comment. Forrest, yeah, he did comment. Where's the chat?
I wasn't even sure he was still with us.
Was it? No, he's not.
He had to jump off, but in the chat, he said he supported parity.
Okay. After missing all this riveting conversation, he may have changed his mind.
I'm calling him when I get out of here.
Tonight we really needed to narrow it down. And I think from staff's perspective, I think you've done that for us. I think we can get it down to maybe a couple different options. We'd like to bring that back to you, I think, in a work session before we send us on to the Planning Commission, unless you would prefer us just to send it to Planning Commission. But okay. We would rather have you give us a clear majority anyway of what you want us to send to Planning Commission and see what happens. So one more work session with you all. Narrow it down to maybe a couple different scenarios with more detail about the impacts on current businesses, that sort of thing.
Like where the alcohol or the liquor stores are?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, sir.
In your mind right now, are you considering schools at a different rate than 1,000?
That's one of the options we would put on there.
It is.
We can maybe even show that on the same map, you know, show it at 500 versus 1,000 versus 700, and you can kind of pick one.
Okay. Maybe we'll get phone calls from citizens helping express their concerns. That would be kind of nice.
You calling me?
I'll call you, yeah. Then you can say, hey, I got this call.
They support my position right on.
Yeah, Mayor, just one other thing that's related to this. The city does need to bring back the dual permanent public use ordinance. We're currently operating under an interim ordinance for the prohibition on public smoking of cannabis. We haven't had an increase in complaints, as far as I understand. So staff's plan was to bring back what we currently, what the council already currently adopted in the interim for the, if you will, the permanent regular ordinance. So we'll be bringing that.
Good.
That's still for the opinion of the council. Okay.
Good down there. Yep. Okay. Yep. I think that's good.
Seemed like after Crystal adopted that policy, every other city followed us right down that road.
Trend center.
Yeah.
We are trend leaders. Holy cows. All right. We're done with cannabis. Constituent updates.
Thank you, Mayor, members of the council. Really just a couple things regarding the Louisiana project. We went over some of it tonight, but I do know after the last meeting where the public did show up to talk about that, police did follow up with them. And I think that I think some of you had heard, we did do, Lieutenant Tourville did go out there right after, back last September when we said we would go out and did run speed patrol for initiate quite a few citations. So the police did go out there. But the police did follow up with them and had been reaching out to them to speak with them specifically about some of their more recent concerns. So just want to give you all an update on that.
So they reached out before he showed up and after, correct?
We had reached out before, but we followed up after for the next, I guess, 48 hours several times. Okay. Multiple people went out and met with him and as well as contacted him in the voicemails.
That's what I understood after the meeting that happened. So, yeah.
The other thing, I did receive another phone call today about the organics. And one of the issues that we had identified is that currently the city does pay through our recycling fees, which is then passed on as part of the recycling fee for the residents for our drop-off site. It's only about $90 a month. So spread that out amongst all the recycling customers, and it's obviously very little. But that is essentially a double charge that they're already paying for that service at the drop-off site. Again, it doesn't have a huge dollar impact, but it's that principle that doesn't, you know, doesn't square. So that was already noted, but I spoke, the same customer I've spoken to every couple of weeks. He's just contacting me for a update. So I gave him the update. I did mention that at part of our conversation with the legislators at the breakfast Saturday, this issue was again brought up, and that it is part of the city's
let us say priorities for the year, and we are working with both the HRG to with Brooklyn Center and New Hope to pursue the organized collection for the curbside organics, as well as continue to work with Hennepin County and push them to make some type of adjustment. I do know that they are hearing from the other cities that are now enforcing this as well. So it is still an ongoing conversation amongst in the area, which we're kind of the tip of the spear on that. So, the other thing I was just going to follow up, we did have two complaints about tree trimming in the last several weeks. And so I've met with Public Works, and we're revising the policy or the practice that we had for that to make sure that the trees that are identified in the public right-of-way versus the ones on the private property and proper notice is given. And it's something that we have not had issues with in the past, but that program bars needs just some more work and clarification. So I'm not sure if anybody else, I know Tracy, you heard from one. So
we cut down someone's tree and they weren't ready for it.
Trimmed it.
Correct. Well, in one case it was their tree. In one case it was the city's tree, but everybody's tree that's in their front yard, whether or not it's in the right of way or, you know, on private property is, as you know, y'all consider it your front yard, your tree,
correct. Yep.
Legally or not. So we're fixing that.
Okay, good. Anything else?
Not for constituent issues, no.
Anybody have anything additional, John?
Yeah, the dog park, you know, the mud. Yeah. I don't know if you saw my email about that. A constituent talked to me that they love the park, but the mud is just, you know, just drives them crazy because their dog is just filthy and they put them in the car and it's everywhere, you know. So, yeah.
Yes. So did you see, I'm sorry, Brad did email the group back about that. Sorry if you missed that. So I forgot about that. Because we want grass to grow.
Yes.
And because of the watershed, we don't want to put additional material on the grass area. But we are seeding it. We are trying to get grass to grow soon as well. Might be next week at this rate, but as soon as the weather allows us.
It will be better.
Yes, it will. And this, as the council knows, this winter really created a unique situation for.
Sure.
Yeah, my beautiful metal's a melt pit too.
Yeah.
It's pretty bad. It's like, it looks like all dirt.
What? No pheasants? Oh, well.
No way.
We have not received complaints about the ice rinks, which I'm glad because I have heard some cities have, but they are what they are.
Yeah, what are we going to do, right? Okay.
I've got one constituent issue. I've got this, and I've talked to Chief Evering about it. One of my neighbors has complained numerous times about parking on the street overnight, including one time he sent me an email about a U-Haul truck that was on the street overnight. I had a really hard time not being sarcastic when I responded to him. But is the community service officer going out from 2 to 5 a.m.?
When we have a community service officer?
Is that who is doing it, right? No?
Yeah, no. So we can send our CSO or police officer out between 2 and 5 and tag them. Yeah. And I can...
I'll forward that.
Is it... Do you know, is it an ongoing every night thing or is it just certain nights?
He is not saying that.
Okay.
He just sent me the address, but then there's a longer email I can't seem to find on my phone that he was complaining about, mostly the rental property next door.
Okay.
That's really not anything that we can do anything about.
I'll send him out there.
Okay. I'll forward the email.
Okay. Sounds good.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks,
Trees.
All right. Any other constituent issues?
No.
Announcements we took care of, I think. Seeing no additional.
I just have one clarification, Mayor. I have the Jasby letter that I'll need for us to sign, but I can get the rest of the council to sign it before we leave tonight. The other item is that the we're actually going to have the closed session in the chambers.
In here.
Oh, you know, got changed.
Okay.
So we're not leaving here after this.
All right.
Yeah, just for new business, curious our plan for the EQC.
Wow.
The other thing I handed out tonight, my work plan, that is actually one of the items included on that.
Okay.
So we can discuss that Thursday.
Okay, got it.
That's the other thing. Thursday, we have two commission two park commission interviews and the development work plan. The other item that I handed out tonight.
Good.
What time on Thursday?
6:30. Okay. All right. So this is an adjournment because we're opening up a separate.
Yes, sir.
Work session. So
yeah. I need to close end this meeting, get a recording going, and then I will open a separate Zoom meeting that will be private.
So we are adjourned.